Thank you, Todd, and thanks for everything you do.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on the value of issues, etc.
You've done so much to teach so many people about the depth of the gospel and to find joy in the Christian life and experience.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, issues, etc. Listen to what you want, when you want, at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking with Joey Pullman here in just a moment about the clash of transgender and feminist ideologies and the real offense that was taken by transgenderists when it came to the Women's March in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for January is timely to this topic. It's called The Ethics of Sex. It takes up the subject of transgenderism from a biblical perspective. The book Ethics of Sex from Taboo to Delight is our Issues Etc. book of the month for January. You can find out more about it right there at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House and order this timely resource for yourself. 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. book of the month for January. Joey Pullman is a regular guest. She joins us to talk about the clash of transgender and feminist ideology surrounding the Women's March on Washington. She's managing editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Trans Activists Attack Feminists for Displaying Genital-Based Womanhood. Joy, welcome back.
Hi there, Todd. Thanks.
There were a lot of symbols, signs, costumes at the Women's March that were on display there, all symbolic of female body parts and things like that. And that probably offended a number of people looking at that as just being crude, but it also offended feminists, well, maybe they're allies, maybe they're not, in the sexual revolution, the transgendered. Why?
Well, now I have to figure out how to say this in a family-friendly way, but the basic idea is that, well, of course, you know, Todd, all women do not have women's body parts. So trans folks were opposed to people, you know, connecting the idea of women and women's body parts, and they found this discriminatory and objective at a bunch of different levels.
Okay, so does that mean that, well, I guess feminism was there first, so they could claim the sexual revolution just by terms of, you know, we took it up first.
We started this thing.
Yeah, does that mean that transgenderism doesn't really fit in the feminist revolution?
Well, it kind of depends on how you look at it. Now, there's a bunch of different strains within feminism, and so there's a group of folks, some of them could tie feminism directly to a woman's, you know, body, her you know, physical being, and that's really a deep part of their philosophy. But other, you know, feminists, more casual feminists that, you know, think of it in different ways. So on the left, there's this movement right now called intersectionality that basically is saying that all people and all these different various identity groups that the left has carved out to kind of try to cobble together and win elections, they should support each other's different political priorities. And so that is kind of basically impossible because these two different, in this arena, because these two different groups have diametrically opposed views about, you know, what a woman's political meaning is and what is a woman. And so it's kind of hard to make a political movement out of some people saying, you know, women are A and other people saying women are B.
This, I think what is kind of behind a lot of the transgender or the gender fluidity movement in the sexual revolution is a rejection of what is usually called the binary, that is, the mm-hmm. gender cannot be male or female. But doesn't feminism, or at least hasn't it in the past, basically depended entirely on the binary to make their point?
Well, right. A lot of, you know, feminism, of course, focuses on the fact that women are different than men, and the major differences related to the difference between the sexes are biological in nature, right? Women can produce babies. Sorry, men can't. You know, women can nurse babies, men can't. And so out of our different procreative aspects of men and women's bodies come about all these different social and political, you know, differences you know, so for example, there's a lot of manifestations in the more popular women's movement that come from just the fact that we are the ones that have the babies. You know, babies need a mommy. Newsflash. And, you know, they need a mommy to kind of to gestate them, but they are bonded with their mother throughout birth and in the early years of their life, and that stretches out for even longer than that. And women's bodies do that in a way that men's bodies just can't. And so a lot of political feminism has been talking, it has been trying to kind of create parity between men and women to kind of around these innate biological differences. But when you have folks saying that, you know, basically, you can be a woman without having a woman's body, that chucks out all these decades of women's thought that is predicated on women's bodies being there and being different.
So this attempt to be as inclusive as possible on the part of the sexual revolution, to try and bring all the parties together, is it futile?
Well... I think it really depends on whether the public at large kind of gets wind of what's going on, because, you know, look, this is a fight between two extremely niche groups of people, but it's going to reverberate out into the broader leftist political movement, and it already has, you know, because each in their own way of these tiny niche groups of radical feminism and radical trans activists tries to control the rest of us, you know, the majority of Americans who are busy with, you know, our kids and our jobs and whatnot, and, you know, their boutique issues that define life for them really don't for the majority of Americans. So it's a weakness to their power of these minority groups to be able to control public funds, public policy, public conversation. And so it's hard, you know, it's hard to know where they can go on from here. And so far, the trans lobby has basically tried to pretend that this program doesn't exist by marginalizing feminists who believe in human biology. And I don't think that those women are pretty strong women. I doubt they're going to let themselves be silenced and threatened by people who are biological men.
Do you think that's behind it really here? That if you got the average old school feminist by herself, maybe a drink or two, and said, look, do you find it basically offensive that there are men, not talking about transgenderism the other way, that there are men who are trying to convince people that they are really women, that the average old school feminist would say, I can't stand it?
Well, yes. I mean, and there enough of them are, you know, you don't have to give them a drink in order to get them to say that. They're coming right out and they find it deeply offensive, you know, that men wearing women's dress would tell women who have actual women's bodies, you know, what we should do with our bodies and how we should represent, you know, them and take care of them and so forth. And furthermore, you know, that they are, how do you say it, somehow able to colonize our bodies is preposterous. So, yeah, I mean, so to someone for whom her being as a woman is really a core part of her identity, to have someone who is simply not a woman tell her what her identity should be is basically, you know, just a new wave of the patriarchy.
Feminists are not accustomed to being called white supremacist or cis supremacist or any kind of supremacist, are they?
No, I'm laughing because it's so ridiculous. You know, if you want a term to have a meaning, you should use it appropriately, right? And so what you're referring to is, you know, literally some of the people in this debate are pulling out the nuclear bomb of white supremacy, you know, on feminist women merely for pointing out that, hey, you know, sorry, but no matter, even if you get surgery, you know, your body is, all of its genes are going to be male, you know, XY chromosomes. So... you know, doing that, again, it's kind of it's bad for our language, it's bad for our political discourse, but as someone, you know, who doesn't call herself either a feminist or associate with these sorts of identity groups, I'm just watching from the sidelines and honestly kind of chuckling.
I can picture at least spirited attempt on the part of a feminist leader. I don't know who that would be, Gloria Steinem. She's a little old, but she does as well as anybody else, kind of the matriarch. Or one of the matriarchs of feminism, standing up at a podium at the next Women's March and trying to get it right. I could see her using phrases like, we who identify as women have been mm-hmm. held down mm-hmm. too long. We who identify as female need equality in the workplace. Is it going to work? Mm-hmm. Is it going to fly?
Well, you know, the problem with that is Gloria Steinem is a white college-educated woman, and those are the people that trans activists don't want to listen to. They're telling white women who started feminism to get on the back of the bus, that we're not allowed to talk, that we need to check our privilege, so on and so forth. So, you know, Steinem, you know, or any other, you know, lady like her could get up there and try to make the right words, but simply by her being, she is objectionable to these people, to, you know, the radical trans types. And so what they really want to do is silence her and demote her and elevate themselves. It's a power play. That's what this all is.
Does it show that transgenderism is on a collision course with other wings of the sexual revolution? Homosexuality is, by definition, one sex who is attracted to the same sex. And there again, that's awfully binary.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, there's a burgeoning disagreement among the other parts of the LGBTQIA plus, you know, plus alphabet soup. You know, but a lot of folks in the lesbian and gay community do not really like where the transgender movement is going, what it's been doing with itself since it rose to prominence after Obergefell legalized same-sex marriage. Trans activists have also told, you know, gay people, lesbians, get on the back of the bus. It's our time now. You know, you got your marriage equality, so it's our turn, you know, to bring ourselves to prominence. So it's basically, they've inaugurated a power play. It's kind of like, you know, being a fly on the wall when the totalitarians or the communists, you know, are deciding who's going to get brought up on charges of sedition first. So right now, this disagreement is largely internal, but it is really there, and it's very serious, and people are not happy.
Does this mean that feminism, in any sense, is an ally against the insanity and the war against reality that is transgenderism? About 30 seconds.
I think the short answer is yes, but it's going to take time to develop. And I think it will be actually what it will require, and is going to happen, is where the trans activists are going to overplay their hand. They're going to think that they're on stronger footing than they are. And then ultimately they're going to realize, you know, 50% of the country is women and 0.03% of them are trans. That's going to answer that right there.
Joy Pullman is managing editor of The Federalist. She's author of a recent column titled Trans Activists Attack Feminists for Displaying Genital-Based Womanhood. You can read it and all of her columns under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Joy, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
By the way, you can read Joy's Wittenberg Trail feature where she talks about her journey from charismatic experience to the solid confession of Lutheran theology in the latest Issues Etc. journal. The journal's absolutely free. It's online, and the latest also continues an article that I've written that concludes a series on myths regarding God's law and God's gospel called Better Than Good, Failed Attempts to Improve on the Gospel, Part 2. It's absolutely free. Subscribe at our website, issuesetc.org. Click the red subscription button in the right-hand column. Enter your email address, and we'll send it to you for free. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. I'll talk with you tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Registration for the 2017-18 school year is now open at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. St. Paul is the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're located 1 mile off Interstate 55. Come check out our pre-kindergarten and elementary school, where worship, historical hymnody, and catechesis are interwoven with direct academic instruction. Kindergarten visitation day is Thursday, February 2nd. Open house is Sunday, February 12th. Find out more at school.stpaulhamel.org.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Make haste, O God, to deliver me.
Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.